Welcome to the second show of the Weekend Windup. I'm your host this week, Matt Provo, and alongside Jack Flanagan and Mitch Roy. Sounds like we're leaving someone out. Where's Manny?
Where's Manny?
Kind of makes you think.
You know, after we've talked to him a lot, I'm just going to guess that he's at the environmental meeting, the Environmental Protection Agency meeting. How about you, Mitch? Where do you think he is?
I think he's at the gym. I think he's always talking about where he's lifting. Oh, I can't
but
today.
He doesn't lift, though.
No.
Kids all talk, no walk.
But he goes to the gym. He's committed to Tufts. He has to go to the gym. He can't not go to the gym. They're going to find out if he doesn't go.
When he's there,
he's not actually lifting. He's just sitting on the side talking to the ladies.
Exactly.
So he's your classic Alex Abad lifter. You go to the gym. You bring your phone out and you take a couple selfies. You know, you gotta look tough.
Planet
flex,
Fitness.
You know, you do a little bit of this,
girls,
little bit
curls
of that.
For the girls.
Gotta do the curls for the girls.
But
you gotta respect
I've also
that.
Heard that Alex Abed's a Planet Fitness kind of guy.
Yeah, Manny's too good for that. He's a college athlete. Oh, actually, Abed is too. So,
but see, Alex Abed is not a Tufts University commit.
True.
Alex Abed is not a wizard like Manny Ray.
True.
That's the problem.
Manny misses a day lifting, they're gonna take away his spot. They're gonna yank him from the team. He can't miss a day.
That's true.
So I bet he's there. Jack, where do you think he is?
He's got to be at the Women's March with his favorite teacher, Mr. Mazeski, back from way back when he was at Bedford High School.
I love Mazeski.
If he's at the Women's March, what do you think his sign says?
Kind of makes you think.
Probably something about the environment and women like tying both together. Women for the environment.
Yeah, I could see Manny holding that sign.
Men and women for the environment. Equality, environment. Environmental equality. That's what I think it's about.
You know, you got to respect the kid, though. He's going out there, pursuing his dream.
He's
defending the environment.
Something you don't see a lot of guys do.
Right. And even our President Trump said he respects the people that are protesting. It's their right to do this.
Exactly.
He respects that right.
However, just because you respect it doesn't mean you have to agree with it. And this week, we really disagree with
there's nothing wrong with it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. He can do whatever he wants. It's his life. He can do whatever he wants.
Want to come to the show.
When you commit to a show, you feel like he should be here.
I guess.
Now we move into the fastest 2 minutes in sports, where we do a rundown of all the biddy games from this past weekend.
In a game affectionately known around the league as the Toilet Bowl, the battle between these two cellar dwellers turned into what many would consider to be more representative of a hockey game than a basketball game. Bakers played a man down the whole fourth quarter, yet their ability to skate past the Koalas for some shorthanded goals was too much for the defenseman to handle. Bakers smoked the Koalas 35-30.
Aggies were able to farm their way to the hoop using the blue-colored hose to plant their position under the rim. The seeds sown in the soil were watered at record speeds from the amount of rain the Aggies produced, flooding any chances the blue hose had of winning. Aggies 2 on the blue hose, 47-40.
Fighting Pickles jarred up the most points they've scored all season, showing the Wolfpack who the alpha males of this game really were. Pickles could not be held to the container, as they ran wild in this one, splashing shots that spewed old-fashioned Gatorade all over the court. Pickles tamed the Wolfpack 58-41.
In a battle of the abnormally colored animals, both the Golden Grizzlies and the Blue Hens performed as their pigment suggested they should. The complexion of the Grizzlies was too much for the lowly Hens to handle, as their win left a pesky stain on the morale of their opponents. Golden Grizzlies discolor the Blue Hens 38-28.
Midway through the game between the Owls and the Orange, the lights in the gym must have gone out, as the Orange couldn't seem to find the rim in the second half. Luckily, the night vision of the Owls kicked in and led them to the light of victory at the end of the game. Owls black out the Orange, 45-32.
A battle spanning multiple ages took place at the gym Sunday, pitting medieval dual tactics against ancient war maneuvers. The swords of the Black Knights cut right through the ill-protected armor of the Trojans, leading the Knights to an easy storming of the enemy's castle. Black Knights conquer the Trojans, 45-35.
In what most consider to be the greatest biddy game of all time, the Penguins waddled their way up and down the court, soiling the dirtbags while doing so. Commissioner and fellow host Mitchell Roy, his game-winning three, buried the dirtbags, sending them back to the ground where they belong. Penguins do the dirtbags dirty, 49-48.
Flying Dutchman proved to have too much hype for the Ichikos to handle in a game closely resembling the Second World War. Just like the country they came from, the Ichikos came out cocky, bombing threes left and right. Unbeknownst to them, the Flying Dutchman showed they were capable of dropping an atomic bomb, sinking shots just like their Allied counterparts sunk the Axis Powers boat 75 years ago. Dutchman forced the Ichikos to sign a peace treaty after this one, winning 51-32.
Woo, that was a good one. So just a reminder, you're listening to the Weekend Windup on Bedford 105.1. So this week we have a very, very special guest, and this one wasn't really expected, but this week we have Cole Wheeler, Rice Owls legend. So, Cole, please explain to us why you're here today.
Well, at first I thought I was going to be here for dropping 28 points on your team when we destroyed you, but
that's harsh.
This week I'm here for, because I hit two half-court shots in this weekend, past weekend's biddy game.
So why did you take these half-court shots? What was your motive for taking these? Did you see the other team take them? You just had to one-up them?
Yeah, when opponent on the other team decided to try to take a half-court shot, and I thought, you know, he missed his, so I figured I'd try to match him, and I matched him twice, actually.
So were you going in with this, like, thinking, I'm going to be LaMelo Ball, and I'm going to go viral on social media?
So LaMelo Ball, just for our listeners who might not know, LaMelo Ball is a high school basketball player who actually has a brother who's pretty good. He's playing at UCLA right now. LaMelo Ball pointed at the half-court line, said, like, asked the guy, hey, you want me to pull up? You want me to shoot from the half-court line? The guy said, yeah. So he did, shot it, swished it, drained it.
And that's what Cole Wheeler did, too.
So Cole, is that what you're going for with that?
The first one I actually couldn't because Zach Gould was guarding me beyond half court, so I had to take it past and then ended up going back to half court to take the first one. With the second one, there was 15 seconds left. I asked my captain, Timmy, if it was okay if I could try to beat LaMelo Ball, and he said sure. So I did. I tried to imitate him as best I could. I pointed at the half court line, shot it, and it went in.
So what were people saying to you after the first shot?
After the first one, it was kind of just like, whoa. Because, you know, nobody really hits those that deep, even in Biddy. And, you know, I was feeling pretty good. And then for the second one, it was just a lot of hype. It was a lot of screaming. I was getting clobbered by my own teammates, the opponent teammates. It was really fun.
Yeah, I was about to say, not even your teammates, but also the Syracuse Orange, who just played you in a Biddy game. And here they are mobbing you.
They're getting smoked. Jack?
I just want to say, though Syracuse hasn't been doing too well, it's just rebuilding year. They will be back.
Excuse me, Jack. Wrong Syracuse. We're talking about the Biddy basketball Syracuse instead of the college that you are going to next year.
All right. So last question, Cole. Did you wish anybody was recording that? Or did anybody record it? First of all, no?
Yes.
Yeah? Somebody had it?
Mason Blanchard had a short, like, 4-second Snapchat video of me hitting the second one. Sadly, your brother Adam was partially in the way, which blocked some of the shot. But you can still tell that it was a half court shot that went in.
So do we post that to Instagram, Twitter? Are we gonna get you viral or something, or what?
Because that's like a once in a, you know, no one sees that. People try to be LaMelo Ball, but not everyone can be LaMelo Ball.
It's almost as if not everybody can be Cole Wheeler. I mean, that could be the new phrase.
Cole hit two of them. LaMelo Ball hit one.
Yeah. So technically, I'm better than him right now.
So when people are going to take half-court shots and point to the line, they're going to say, oh, I'm going to Cole Wheeler this shot and say, oh, I'm going to go LaMelo Ball this
shot. Exactly. Except they have to do it twice. And then
they have to do it twice. Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly. All right, Cole, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure.
Just a reminder, you're listening to the Weekend Windup on Bedford 105.1. And as you saw in our promo video, we have some really esteemed guests this week. So we'll let them do their introductions themselves. Sam?
All right, you can call me Sammy Lades if that's what you want. If you don't, that just means we're not friends. I don't know, Matt, you do you. But yeah, I'm Sammy Lades, and I'm the captain of the South Beach State Dirtbags.
And I am Shane Curtin. I am his co-captain of the Long Beach State Dirtbags.
Yeah, I think it's
Long.
I think
it's Long. It is Long Beach.
The South Long Beach State Dirtbags. Don't get that confused.
We moved to the South recently.
Not a bad thing. All right. So we want to know how you guys' season's going overall so far. What's your record like? Talk about some of the games.
I think our record is much better than expected. At the beginning of the year, we went into there with a game plan of if we get a solid 2-win season, then we're going to be pretty happy. But if our goal is 4 wins.
And you've already got 3, correct?
We got 3 already, you know, 6 games in, 3-3 record. We were 2-1 at one point.
That last game against the Penguins was an absolute thriller.
It was.
We're going to save that discussion for a little later.
All-time classic. Stay tuned.
So yeah, I think we're gonna get to that 4 mark pretty soon. We're playing the Bakers this week. I don't know.
They're hot though. They've won 2 of the last 3 games. So, I don't know.
Okay, they won against us. Does not count.
Yeah, I guess one win is. I don't even know if all of them are gonna be there. Yeah, the dedication knows? is lacking.
They all show up at 8:05 to our game. We had to delay our game so all the Baker College Bakers show up.
We won't be doing any of that delay stuff. No. We start right on time because we have the dedication, and that's right. Why we're a unit.
All right.
You know? Yeah. So you guys have lost 3 games by a combined total of 6. That's 6 points. 1 by 3, yep. 1 by 2, and 1 by 1. So how does that make you feel that you can at least compete with anyone? You know we're going for 4 wins here, but how does it make you feel that you can at least compete and you're in every single game?
It makes us feel really good that we can compete with teams that we thought would have zero chance of beating at the beginning of the year. But also, we also feel that we are a team that could have been 6-0 at this point. And it is a bit frustrating.
It's a bit bold.
Yeah.
You know, makes me feel like trash, Mitchell. Matt? Makes me feel like absolute garbage. I think we could have pulled off the dub on every single one of those occasions. And just because one of our guys didn't hit a 3 on every single game, that's why we lost? I guess it's partly on me. My 3s, either I wasn't taking them or they weren't going in.
I don't know if I've even shot a three.
You've not shot a 3-pointer.
I think you said it yourself in your post-game interview. When Caleb, who was doing the interview, asked you what you guys could have done better today to get the win. You said you didn't shoot. You're shooter, shoot.
Shooter's gonna shoot, you know what I mean? Yeah.
And you're a 3-point shooter, you didn't shoot.
Yeah, I'm really a weapon at all points
guard,
of the court.
Center, everything.
I don't have a range physically. Like, they try to get me the ball on every occasion. Sometimes I show pity other players, like Tom, our first round pick. Yeah. I'm like, all right, Tom, I guess you can have the ball, but next time... Give it back to me.
We try and make it the fun experience that Biddy is supposed to be by, you know, letting our first round pick play more, you know.
Yeah, Sam Lederman, I've been told by some people, including Mr. Jeremy Natale, he says you're not a weapon. What do you say to that?
Oh, wow.
I'm an AK-47, baby. You know, like I said, I'm a weapon. That kid, ask me how much he really played last year.
Or last week.
I don't even think that kid's playing. I think he's like soft or something. He got hurt.
Yeah. He's trying to fire shots.
His ankle, rolled his ankle, and now he's not playing.
He's trying to fire shots at me right now, but we all know that I'm the weapon, so I'm going to be the one firing the shots, okay?
So you guys seem like you have pretty good chemistry. So you mind talking to us about the players in your team, like individually, like the team chemistry or your Snapchat group?
Oh, yeah. We do have a Snapchat group chat that all the team has bonded over. We are a very close unit. We went into the draft thinking, let's get people that we can have fun with before we prioritize skill. And we got our best player, and then we were like, okay, let's get people we know and we like. And we ended up having to draft some players so that we could actually compete that we didn't really know that well. But then they all knew each other, so the chemistry's really bonded. And lots of good banter, you know, going on the Dirtbags.
Yeah, and for a lot of teams, the trophy is the championship. But it seems like for this team with 2 players... the trophy is actually Shane's sister. Ooh. Now, don't let that sound weird. It's just our first round pick and another pick of ours. They're competing for our love. And really, there's no better chemistry than a little bit of love triangle going on. They compete every day. Sometimes that might be a distraction. Other times, just get some hot. You know what I mean?
Hot take. I think that's actually a good thing for your team.
I agree.
It's driving your players to compete with each other almost, and like they're like trying to get something other than win the game.
Yeah, you know, you gotta show off. My sister's a curtain, so she's got very high standards, obviously. So you know, they gotta show up and play ball.
So talk to us a little bit about the specific players on your team. Maybe give each of them a shout out. Talk to us about some of the good things that they can do for your team.
Because besides you, Sam, you guys have a lot of really good weapons.
We'll slow down on the Sam talk because we already know the weapon he is.
Yeah. All right. So, I guess we don't really know the exact order, but we'll start out with our boy, Thomas Morgan.
T-Mo.
The flame of our team, and that's not because he's ginger. All right. We got him in the first round. We traded for the 4th round pick. We thought he would be able to get him there, and we were able to get him there. And that was really the basis of our team. We played with him last year, and that's just a huge piece, like you were talking about earlier with that chemistry. So, you know, he's a shooter, too. He's hot from 3-point range. Some might say he's wet. And I would also say that he is very wet, sir.
Yeah. And then, like, we kind of took Tom first and then tried to build around him. So we ended up grabbing Ben Black and Jason Boucher both in the second round, which came out of the trade for the first round pick, too. And they both kind of, they all, like, Jason and Tom are on the same line. They have the best chemistry on the team on the court as far as, you know, all the passing goes there. So Jason racks up the assists as Tom racks up the points. And Ben Black is our number one guy in the second line.
One of the few successful Biddy trades we have.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Some have been, a little worse than that. I don't know.
Disasters.
Yeah.
Talk to us about some of your later round picks. I think you've had some of your later round picks perform pretty well for you guys, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we compensate. So basically, we took Andrew Schroeder in the fourth round. And you may be saying to yourself,
Bold.
Why? Why, Sam and Shane, why would you do that? And the answer
kinda
is...
Kind of makes you think.
It does make you think. And the answer is because we didn't have anyone else in mind and we scrambled for time. And so Andrew was there. And he's our buddy. So we took him.
There.
He's something. He plays.
He's there. He's so, a body.
We have Schroeder and obviously all our great friends there, but we got some late round snags that have really been performing. I mean, I could even say better than Schroeder possibly. You know, we have Jack Chisholm, sometimes referred to as the Chiz God. He's a Frisbee legend also. That's how we knew him and we took him in the draft. He's been fire from 3-point range.
Can I talk about looters?
He's clutch. I'll give you permission to talk about looters.
All right. So, steal of the draft, in my opinion.
Top 10 player.
Alex Luders, known also as the Lude Meister. Now, I don't know if he's really embraced this nickname yet, but we're going to keep calling him that. And he's wet most of the time. We'll give him the ball, he'll pop it up, and the other team's like, oh, this kid's just popping it up. Boom! Three!
Boom! Right in your face.
Boom, three. And then, you know, and in our last game, he really had a clutch three. They weren't expecting it, and then boom.
All right, so last week, you guys were featured on the first BCTV Biddy Game of the Week this year. How did that make you feel, and did you guys change your approach at all because of that?
We were honored to be on that first game broadcasted. I mean, it changed our approach, as in, I got to look a little better, you know, but, you know, the dirtbag way always stays the same most of the time, and, you know, it's feed Tom, get Sam the ball down low, and he'll eat. You know, all the good things that have been giving us wins. And, you know, it almost got us there.
Also, defensively, I know you absolutely shut down jump shot Jeff Masso. Ooh.
Right. So let's get into this game. In my opinion, this was the best Biddy game of the year so far.
Oh, agreed.
Your team versus my team, the Youngstown State Penguins.
Probably because 100%. You hit the game-winning three, but...
No. Even if I didn't hit the game-winning three... I think it was one of the best games of the year. So talk to us. Take us through that game. What was your game plan going into it?
All right.
And what happened?
So basically, real David versus Goliath story we got here. You guys came into it thinking, this is nothing. You underestimated Alex Luders. And,
he wasn't there.
Yeah, but he has the spirit on our team. And you also underestimated Harry Hawkins, who had an amazing game.
He played really well.
Those handles.
So really, our game plan going into it was just, we need to pound you guys down. We need to break you. We need to break your spirit. We need to break you physically. I told him, if you need to, throw some bows. I don't care. And obviously, that got in Jeff's head. I know you said that when Jeff is hot, he gets, when he's mad, he gets hot. And so I just tried to keep it light. I said that I'm a sneaky snake. He laughed. We almost won.
We
shut him down.
He didn't have his best game of the year. He didn't play awful, but he didn't have his best game of the year. He could have played a little better.
I mean, Sam shut him down. He's just the best defender in the league down low. So
we get later in the game, and the commissioner, Mitch Roy, he hits the game-winning three. So with 16 seconds left, you're down by one. So in the huddle as captains, what are you thinking during this time? What is going through your mind after... The commissioner.
There were separate reactions for me and Sam there. Sam was in the attitude of the person on the court of, we can get this ball. We have the ball. We're going to get it back. We're going to put it in. We're going to win this game. I was on the bench like, we're doomed. This is the worst thing that could have happened. And, you know, it was a rough huddle. It was one of the more sad huddles the Dirtbags have had to deal with.
Take us through that last play where you guys had the ball with 15 seconds left. What was the strategy there?
So the strategy was initially feed Sam, of course, but
feed Sam.
Yeah. Why'd you laugh at that? All right. No, but for real, we really wanted to get the ball to Tom. He had a heck of a quarter and a heck of a half and a heck of a game. So we wanted to get him the ball. And then we also had Ben Black on that line, so we just wanted to get the ball to one of them. Nothing really was clicking. We didn't think of a game plan exactly. Game plans, that's not our style. Yeah. Dirtbags,
all right.
We do things in the moment, you know what I mean?
Harry Hawkins, he says that he should have taken the shot when he had the ball.
On the last shot?
Yeah.
I believe that Jack Chisholm should have taken that shot. I think he was getting hot.
I think Ben Black was the one who ended up taking it, correct?
Ben Black was the one that ended up taking it. I think Tom and Ben, which is like, if they're on the same line, they're going to run the offense through those two because they're the top two picks on the team. And I think Tom gave it to Ben. Tom expected Ben to try and give it back to him when Tom got open. So some miscommunication. Ben took the shot. It's all good. You know, it happens. I think Chisholm was open. I think he could have taken that shot. He was getting hot there in the fourth.
Andrew Schroeder also suggests that he should have taken the shot.
He's wrong.
Okay, I have a couple choice words for Andrew Schroeder that I'm not sure I can say on the air. But basically, we didn't want the ball hitting the backboard and bouncing all the way back to him because that's his shot.
He could have potentially scored on the opposite basket.
Yeah, it's 100% possible. So that's not happening.
So now, looking ahead, you have a schedule. You know, against the Ichikos, still don't know what
that is. Okay, that's Japanese.
Trojans and Aggies. So, what do you make of these games, and what do you expect from them, real quick?
You know, there's some tough ones coming up. I think we've proven that we can hang with the best of them, as we've came within three of the current first place team, and they're currently undefeated. So, I think we can handle it.
Yeah. So finally, all we got to say is we're going to keep pounding them down. It really doesn't matter who they are or what they do. We're going to beat them no matter what. Dirtbag way.
All right, guys. Final question. Exit interview here. This one's directed at Shane.
Okay.
We're thinking about doing an ice cream social after the games next week.
Oh, that's so nice.
All captains are invited. You guys in?
Of course. Definitely will be there with a, you know.
How many scoops? One, two, or three? I got to know, Commissioner.
I only get threes, baby.
Three scoops. Sam?
Honestly? Six scoops.
Six scoops. All
right. I got to get that protein in me. I know you don't think ice cream has protein, but... It does, trust me. It's a hidden secret.
Gain season.
So thank you very much for joining us, boys. It was a pleasure.
Pleasure's mine.
Yeah. Thank you guys. Big fans of the show.
We appreciate it.
Dirtbags are a great team with great chemistry. Thank you.
We know.
Appreciate that. Yeah, thank you.
Welcome back to the weekend windup on Bedford 105.1. This week in Bedford High School sports, the boys' basketball team lost a close one to undefeated Portsmouth last Saturday, 56-42. Girls' basketball got a W against Alvern Wednesday, 50-25. In hockey, they played many games, not many good opponents, however. They win 9-1 against Pinkerton, 9-0 against Memorial, and 6-0 against Trinity. In Nordic, the team had a rough meet last Saturday, skiing in scorching 40-degree temperatures, making the snow conditions nearly unbearable. Despite this, captains Allie Vikstrom and Jake DeAngelis were able to place third and fourth, respectively. In boys' indoor track, the boys' team had a solid performance all around, including new record from freshman phenom Zach Vero in the 300. Dave Manella, Aiden Kenny, Connor Collins, and Mike Giraldi placed second in the 4x400 relay. Girls' indoor track, standouts Molly McCool and Shanna Scribner placed first in their events, while Delaney Flanagan set a new personal record for the 1600 meters. And lastly, in wrestling, the Bulldogs took a hard loss to Concord last week, Wednesday. Four Bulldogs were able to pin their opponents, including Biddy star Chris Francis. Now we have our new guest, Victor Plant. Victor is the best wrestler to ever grace the hallways of Bedford High School, and so we'd just like to ask him a few questions this week. So, Victor, we don't know much about wrestling, so explain to us how wrestling meets work. How do you earn points for your team? Because we go to a meet and it says 40-39, but we have absolutely no idea how that happened.
Well, I'd like to first, you know, say right off the bat, Bob Heald is actually the greatest wrestler to ever walk the halls of Bedford. I am nothing like Bob.
He's committed to West Point, correct?
Yes,
he's wrestling there right now?
Yeah, he is. So basically in wrestling, you know, obviously you're out there individually, but it really is a team sport because depending on how you score gives you the points on the board when you're wrestling. So for example, if you pin someone, which is you have to have them on their shoulder blades for 3 seconds, that gives you 6 points, and that's added towards your team, which is equivalent to a forfeit. So if you go out there and you're unopposed because they don't have, you know, the member of your weight class that you're supposed to wrestle, I mean, there's other ways, you know, you can get points, whether by default, you know, a major decision, just regular decision, or even a, you know, a tech. But most importantly, you always have to try your hardest when you're out there, because you never want to be in a close situation. So, for example, we actually tied a team we faced a couple weeks ago. Jack, do you know what team that was? Oh, yeah, it was, I think it was...
It was a team from New Hampshire. That's what we can narrow it down to.
I'm trying to remember, but, oh, God. Anyways.
Concord?
No, it was not Concord. We did not tie the second best team in the state. Well, anyways, we tied them. It was 39-39, and basically they have to go through, in order to tie break, it's not like hockey where you do some... Do some penalty shots, but
all right. So Victor, that's good stuff to know about wrestling. I think a lot of people don't have any clue as to what wrestling really is,
or still don't have any clue what wrestling is.
No, but that's all right.
It's really hard to explain.
But Victor, everybody at the high school knows who you are. Everybody's heard your stories. Mm. We want to know a little bit about your childhood and how that's affected your wrestling career. We've all heard your crazy childhood stories. Give us a little bit of those. What's that
Well,
done for you?
Jack, it really depends on what you're looking for, whether it's in sports, what I've done at school, and depends what you're looking for. But
give us your most crazy one that you think has influenced your wrestling career.
What's turned you into the prolific wrestler that you are today?
Well, actually, I'd have to say, just like ever since I was a child, I couldn't really find the right sport. So my dad kind of forced me into hockey. He says I was pretty good. But, you know, he just kept putting me on defense. And no matter how many times I wanted to be at center, he wouldn't let me. No, he'd put me on defense. I didn't enjoy that.
I have a quick story. So I remember, Victor, third grade basketball, rec basketball. My team, you were on...
Mr. Cappagels'
team.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so my team would share the court with you guys in practice. So we'd scrimmage you guys every week.
Oh, I remember that.
You remember this. So I remember you, as you being your crazy third grade self, weren't the best basketball player.
No.
But that's why you went to wrestling, right? Right. So what you did instead of playing basketball, what you do is you'd go around the court and you'd pretend as if you were like sniping people. Like,
oh my god!
You'd hold the gun and you pretend like you're holding a sniper, and you.
I forgot about that. I like to play on the playground World War II a lot with my best friend at the time, Nick Mirabile. We would go around. We'd go around and we'd pretend that we were storming the beaches of Normandy, and we would switch every day between World War II or Vietnam War.
Now, you're saying that you were storming the beaches of Normandy in second grade.
Well, third, fourth, and, you know, in fifth, I kind of realized, you know, I can't be doing this.
That's some pretty impressive World War II knowledge for a second grader.
Oh, I'd play all the Call of Duties. You know, I start off with Call of Duty 2, Big Red 1, worked my way towards Call of Duty 3, and then I went back to Call of Duty 1, and then Call of Duty Finest Hour, which is actually, I think... my favorite at the time. But basically where this is going is, you know, I've had a very, you know, vivid mind of, you know, what I think toughness should be, whether it's storming the beaches of Normandy or, you know, getting out there and trying to score a puck. But, you know, I tried a whole bunch of other sports. Like, I tried baseball, I tried soccer.
But they weren't tough enough for you.
No.
They didn't get that storming the beaches of Normandy mentality, right?
No, I hated them more than anything. I remember we had this German kid in our team named Hans, and when we lost, we were so close to winning. My dad was coaching. We were so close to winning, and, you know, Hans, you know, kicks the ball and ties it up for us, and then we have to go into a shootout. And what happens? We mess it all up when we lose, and everyone was crying but me. And you know what? It was kind of funny. But anyways,
that's good though. That the toughness that you've kind of you realized what your kind of forte was as at a young age, and that's good. And that's good that wrestling was what you found.
basically how I found wrestling was, you know, I was a huge fan of basketball, and I wasn't really that good. I was good on defense. I couldn't shoot. I was never tall enough. And I remember, you know, Paul Desconti.
Do you mean Wetball Paul?
Wetball Paul.
Wetball Paul.
Well, it was a rec game, fifth grade, and, you know, Paul has the ball, and what do? Of course, I yank the ball from him, and he flies on the ground, and he was significantly bigger than me, and he's complaining to the ref, but you know what? The ref knew. The ref knew he was just being a chump out there. Anyways, no, but I love Paul. Shout out to Paul. Wetball Paul.
So, your phenomenal record over the past 4 years in high school started with quite the freshman year. You won freshman states, correct? And then you went to nationals. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I did. At the time, my freshman year, I was mostly on JV because we had a very packed team, especially with seniors. But I'd like to say I swung a bit because I did wrestle on varsity too for some tournaments and a couple meets, which, you know, it was an eye-opening experience because, you know, eighth grade is a lot different than, you know, your freshman year of wrestling. It's
right.
A lot more intense. You know, eighth grade is just like you wrestle for fun. You know, you actually have to win for your team. Otherwise, your coach gets really upset. But basically, no one's ever won freshman states. And freshman states is just a tournament that brings all the incoming freshmen. You put them into weight classes and you guys wrestle off. And, you know, some of the guys were like, good luck, you know, we didn't win it, so we don't expect you to. And I'm like, no, I'm going to win it. And then they're like, okay. And then our coach at the time, head coach, Coach Benicasa, was like, go out and win it. So I did, you know. I kind of had a tougher bracket with my first two guys because they were really hard. I actually beat my second guy in overtime. But the next two guys weren't too bad, but... You know, I won. I was really excited. I was the only one to win it that day, and I was the first in Bedford history. And obviously, the senior at the time, Chris Connery, he tweeted it out, and yeah, it was good. It was a good feeling. But I wouldn't say my high school career, as much as I enjoyed it and loved it, I feel like I could have done a little bit better because obviously, sophomore year, I was booted off the team for grades, which I was good. I was third in D1 at the time for 138, and I was wrestling up. But last year, my junior year, you know, obviously I came back. But I injured my patella from a wrestling match when the guy picked me up, and I tried to break my fall by landing on my knees.
Ooh.
And
ouch.
It really hurt it. Yeah, ouch. But I was out for a couple weeks, and the physical therapist, you know, was kind of stupid. Because he's just like, okay, well, we're going to put a towel on your foot and you're going to kind of slide back with it. And he'd have me do stuff like that, which didn't help. And after 2 weeks, he said I was fine. And I go out and I re-hurt myself. But I did rest it more. And then I went back to him and he worked with me more. And then, you know, I was starting to look better. And my coach said, if there's a chance that you can wrestle, would you still want to go to states? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, we might have to put you at 145 because obviously you can't make 138. And for those of you who don't know, wrestling, you have to be in specific weight categories to wrestle. So I came back, I wore my brace, and I was having a hard time because, you know, my knee was really swollen and it was hurt. So I ended up only taking a sixth at states.
That's still not bad. Sixth in the state.
Yeah, yeah.
Only sixth in the state. Oh, wow.
No, it's... No, I'm happy. But I feel like I could have done a little bit better if, you know, my knee was in better shape.
So just a reminder that you're listening to Bedford 105.1. Now, I have another question for you. So going back to this season, so talk to us about the seven kids in the team and what's the atmosphere in the locker room like?
Oh, well, the locker room is kind of, I don't know, at first in the beginning of the year, everyone's really quiet because we don't have a lot of seniors. It's actually just me and David Spencer. But
interesting.
And then we don't have that many juniors either. I can't think of at the top of my head. I think only like four, I think. Yeah. But we have a lot of we had a lot of incoming freshmen, including my brother right next to me. But the thing is, you know, we kind of had to like build up the atmosphere, you know, to like get everyone, you know, break everyone in and be friendly with each other. And now it's just like everyone's crazy in the locker room, you know. Obviously, I'm out for the season right now because of my patella, which you guys probably know. I'm not sure if other, you know, listeners know that, but you know, I'd walk in and they're all like just grabbing each other, bumping music, and it's just a good environment.
So what's your role been on the team this year since you've been out? What have you been doing in practices and at the mat?
Well, at practices, you know, I help out as much as I can with, like, you know, people who are new to the team, or, you know, just I go around, you know, critique people.
I was in the locker room once, and I did see you forcing some kid to make weight. I thought that was very impressive and very captain-like of you.
Oh, that was actually my brother right here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my brother's really fat. No, just kidding. He can't really make the weight this year. But, Jack?
So we actually have Jack Plant.
Oh, yeah.
Also known as Baby Jack or
Agent Jack Poop.
Jack Poop, yeah.
Because of his YouTube video.
But he's in the studio right now. Jack, do you have any comment as to what your brother was doing to you?
So, like, I was almost, like, 3 pounds over my usual weight class, even when I try to cut the weight.
You mean always?
Yeah, and my brother would always tell me to try to cut the weight, so I tried to, like, skip eating lunch and keep running on the treadmill and stuff, but I still couldn't really make the weight, so,
Always a fun time. Yeah, you couldn't make the weight that day. It was really upsetting for the team.
So besides the captaincy, what are the coaches like?
Oh, our coaches are great. We have actually Chris Como, who is the head coach. He was my assistant coach my freshman year, but sophomore year he became the head coach because Coach Benicasa, the former one, actually quit to be closer to his family and for his work. But and then we have our assistant coach, Mike Poplowski, who is extremely knowledgeable in the sport. He coached at Salem, New York, since 1968 to 2010. And then he came here in 2014-15, that season of my sophomore year. And last year, we actually just picked up Evan Weber. He is a great guy. He wrestled when my head coach did, Coach Como, in high school, which is good. You know, he's really funny. I always make jokes with him. Sometimes I think, you know, he thinks I'm a bit of a weirdo, but, you know, it's all good.
So can you talk to us a little bit about the competition around the state? I know Timberlane is a perennial power. That's about all I know about wrestling.
They're like 24 years New England state champions. They're
New England champions?
Yeah.
Wow.
They're good. Something like that for New England. But yeah, just their program. They're not really good at anything else but wrestling.
It's what you get for living in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. That is what you get. And you know what? Now they destroy every single team that comes in, and their off-season team, which is known as Smitty's Barn, coached by Matt Smith, is really good. You know, I've actually been to a couple of their off-season practices, and, you know, they just do a lot of live wrestling, which is what really, you know, gets you better and all. But, the competition around here is it's pretty decent. Obviously, Timberlane and, you know, the team we faced, Concord, you know, last week was, they're just really good. And we're kind of in our reforming years because, you know, the middle school has had trouble finding a head coach, which we finally have now. And, you know, like I said, we lost a lot of guys the past couple of years as we're building on, you know. We lose some to build some up. What I gotta say.
Brick by brick.
Brick by brick, ladies and gentlemen. That's content that's giving people what they want. But Victor, I've seen wrestling matches. Is it awkward? I mean, you're in those tight little leotard things, you know, like,
well,
it's gotta be kind of awkward, right? Being that close.
I'd like to say that it's a singlet, not a leotard.
I mean, what's the difference?
The difference, well, I think one of them's for wrestling and one of them is what Borat wears. So.
Now, which one's which, though?
We're outsiders. We can't really tell the
singlet
stuff.
Singlet is what the wrestlers wear, as I just said, and the leotard is for, you know, people of that nature. When I first was introduced to the sport, I didn't actually have to wear a singlet until my coach made me, because back then you could wear a t-shirt and shorts, but it was kind of weird at first because it's really tight on you and... You know,
you just want to show off your muscles, right?
Well, I do look in the mirror at myself a lot of times when I wrestle, like right before I wrestle and go out there because, you know, looks good. Looks good on me. That's all I got to say. But
you look good in anything, Victor.
Oh, Mitch, not like you, though.
We know that you can't see anything since this is the radio. However, Victor is sporting a great red headband in the radio studio as he thought that our viewers would enjoy it. However, we do not have viewers. We have listeners.
He was also disappointed he forgot his sunglasses for the viewers.
I am. I'm very upset. You just... But my sunglasses.
If anybody could rock a pair of sunglasses, it's Victor
Plant. It's Victor Plant.
Really? Nobody can rock a pair of sunglasses like
this. It's you guys. You guys here at 105.1 WBHNH.
That's all right, Victor. Enough. We got a couple more questions for you before we're going to let you go, all right?
Yeah.
First one. Have you ever had to wrestle a female? And if you have, can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah.
We got to do it quick, too. We've only got
so
much
last
time.
Time I wrestled a female was freshman year, and I thought to myself, well, I don't really want to be in this situation. So I took her, and I headlocked her to the ground within the first 3 seconds. And I pinned her.
So was that your competition for freshman states? Was that why you won freshman states?
No, there was no females in my weight bracket at freshman states. This was just at my first varsity, dual meet. But before that, I wrestled a couple JV matches, and you know she was one of them. I took it down.
All right, great. Final word. Any people you'd like to recognize?
Oh, yeah. Really, I'd like to recognize, Bob Heald, Zach Gilman, my former teammate, and Santosh Patel, the greatest guy of all time.
No, Victor, you're the greatest guy of all time.
And that's why you were here on Bedford 105.1. Thanks for coming in this week,
wait,
Victor.
Wait, hold on. Can I do the jingle?
Do the jingle. Let's hear it.
105.1 WBAS.
If that was correct, that would be great.
Thanks a lot, Victor. We appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you guys for having me.
Welcome back to the Weekend Windup on Bedford 105.1. So this is your favorite time of the show, where we have a bunch of segments lined up, and we hope you enjoy them. So our first one is, kind of makes you think. This is where we bring up different conspiracy theories around sports. So, Mitch, would you like to start it off?
Sure. So, I saw a thing recently on social media, I think it was Twitter. 11 of the last 12 Super Bowl champs have been wearing white on their jerseys. So, kind of makes you think. Is the NFL racist?
Makes you think, really.
Are they somehow rigging it so the white team wins? I don't know.
That's what they call a microaggression.
Maybe.
Look, if Manny was here, I'm sure he'd be willing to defend everything about microaggressions and everything. But I'd have to say that the NFL isn't racist. I mean, I don't know. No, I'm pretty sure they are not racist. I can almost guarantee that. But...
Never know.
Never know.
But there was a certain radio show down in Atlanta that was calling Boston the most racist sports town.
Which is why they chose white jerseys, correct?
I think they chose white jerseys.
They did choose white jerseys.
I know they chose white jerseys, but I think that was just because the white jerseys are historically known for winning.
Or because Boston is racist.
Well, according to these Atlanta Falcons crazy fans, I guess, maybe. I don't know. Jack, what did you have in this?
That kind of makes you think.
It kind of makes you think. I don't know.
I don't know what they're doing down in Atlanta, Georgia, but I mean, Matty Ice, Matty Ryan is from Boston.
He went to BC.
Yeah, that's his college.
They have no right to criticize Massachusetts and Boston if their own quarterback, MVP Matt Ryan,
is from Boston.
Exactly.
Or went to college in Boston. He's not from Boston.
Exactly.
But honestly, he has ties there.
If we're talking about Matty Ryan at Boston College, he should have won the Heisman. Back his senior year.
Oh, yeah.
He got robbed.
Oh, yep. Definitely.
He got robbed.
Definitely best quarterback that year. Best player. I don't even know. Did Tim Tebow win it? Matt Ryan, as we have come to realize, I mean, hindsight's 2020, but Matt Ryan is obviously the better quarterback there.
Yeah. Yep. Who's laughing now?
Right, exactly.
That is another one.
Tim Tebow's playing baseball now.
Kind of makes it think.
Yeah. Huh. All right.
So now I have one. So, crazy story. Saw it online. A player in New Zealand, a basketball player in New Zealand, his eye popped straight out of the socket.
Mid-game, wow.
I saw a picture of they're holding a towel on it, trying to keep the ball in. Crazy stuff. So, maybe.
Kind of makes you think.
He should have seen an eye doctor.
Kind of makes you think.
Kind of makes you think.
What do they do? What are the players doing? Do they just hold the towel?
Exactly. Like,
they bring him to an eye doctor. His eye is not in his head.
Maybe. Like, that's just a New Zealand thing.
Kind of makes you think.
Kind of makes you think.
What are they doing down there?
Common sense. I don't know. It's different down south, I guess.
Our next segment, we're kind of bringing this one back from last week. Typical. You can find one every week. The Hardo.
Hardo.
So, we have one. Take it away.
Sure. So, my Hardo this week, good friend of mine, Bitty Captain, who we'd like to have on the show at some point, actually. Name's Tyler Medikoff. So, this week, this Saturday, I think, he's decided he was going to hold a practice for his Bitty team. And at this practice, he was going to, like act as if he was a coach and, like, run plays and, like, come up with different out-of-bounds plays.
Now, this is Bitty basketball.
This is Bitty basketball, which we don't practice in Bitty basketball. We just show up Sunday mornings and play the games, making Tyler a Hardo.
Hardo.
One thing I'd like to point out, Matt, you had a practice with Bitty one time, correct?
Yes, we did, against Syracuse.
Okay, right, but that's the difference between your practice and what Tyler's going to do.
Yep.
Your practice, you just scrimmaged into the team. Like, it wasn't really a practice.
And we literally rented out of the gym at the YMCA and messed around and played a scrimmage.
Right, like, you weren't putting in any plays or anything. Tyler's like, he's 5-1. He thinks he's hot stuff. He's like, all right, we got to stay at the top of the table. We got to, like, start putting in plays.
I'm
like,
no, we had Owen Schaffler popping half-court shots.
Yeah, I mean, right. So you were just screwing around. Tyler's actually, like, trying to take this seriously.
My Hardo, always a Hardo, kind of like J.J. Watt from last week. This one's James Harrison. Now, everyone's been looking up to James Harrison lately. I think the guy is on steroids, first and foremost. Okay, let's just start there. The guy is definitely on steroids.
Oh, definitely. Half the people in NFL are. Their steroid policy, their HGH policy isn't great.
Exactly. So they had a divisional game against the Kansas City Chiefs. Ended probably around 11 p.m. Central Time. So what does this Hardo of the Week James Harrison do? Post 10 videos on Instagram of him working out at 6 in the morning, wearing the exact clothes he wore on the flight. So the guy goes straight from the airport right to the weight room and decides to take videos of it. Like, if the guy really cares about getting better, then he shouldn't care about what other people think and putting it on Instagram. Like, oh, great for you. You go to the gym at 6 in the morning. But no one really cares.
Right. If he didn't put the videos on Instagram, I'd have no problem with this. I think, like, yep, that's dedication. You lose, you're already working next season, get better. But the fact that he thinks he has to put it on Instagram, that's hard on move.
Every single set he had was on Instagram.
Honestly, that's a Manny Ray move.
That's a Manny Ray move.
It's kind of showing up at the gym and, like, do a few things. I'm going to post something on social media real quick. Make sure everybody knows I was here. And
then go Snapchat some girls.
Exactly.
All right, so my Hardo this week, we've got there's a little altercation in the high school. So it's not really a sports Hardo.
That's all right.
I'm not sure who the Hardo was. There's two characters here. We've got Greg Taylor, the famed ex-baseball player, and we've got Mr. Therrien, a sub who likes to claim that he's somehow involved with Harvard, even though
he wears that vest every time, every day.
So number one. Hardo move number one.
Hardo move number one, yeah.
Wearing a Harvard vest.
When you didn't even go to Harvard.
What is up with that? That's as Hardo as you can get. Like, it's Hardo. It just says Hardo.
We had to ask him if he went to Harvard or not. And no, he said, I do humanitarian aid once a year. That's it. It's not even like an everyday thing. He doesn't even go down every day. The dude does it once a year. And he thinks he has the right to wear around a Harvard vest. Like, no, please get a diploma there first.
So second part of the story. Greg Taylor sitting in class watching a movie.
Might have been doing his math homework. We don't know.
But he's sitting on his calculator.
You're right.
TI-84.
Probably doing the math homework.
In science class during a movie. A movie is time for relaxation.
Exactly.
And you're doing your math homework. Can you say Hardo?
Hardo. Just chill out, man.
And then number three.
Number three? Ooh.
Number three.
Mr. Therrien walks right to Greg Taylor. He looks at him and says, Greg, are you on your phone? Greg says,
No, I'm just on my calculator. And he says, oh, really? Go to the office. Like, this is just what I heard.
No, I was sitting, Matt, please elaborate.
Yeah, I sit
right behind Mr. Greg Taylor in environmental and Mr. Therian. I'm going to go with that Mr. Therian was extremely embarrassed to find out that after he's trying to nab everyone on their phones, he finds out this one kid's trying to be on his calculator. That's kind of embarrassing. And so there's no way for him to recover from it, so he just says assistant principals. And Greg, he did get sent home by the assistant principals, but not because he was in trouble, but however, because the assistant principal had no idea why the sub sent him down there in the first place.
So even the AP thinks Mr. Therian is a hardo.
Hardo.
You know. Just hardos all around right
That's
here.
That's when you know.
You can't get any more hardo.
Our next segment is locker room talk. Now, in honor of the famous line by our president of the United States, we thought we'd find some good post-game quotes or some actual locker room talk. So, Mitch, take it away.
Sure. So, for my locker room talk guy, I got Martellus Bennett, number 88, Patriots tight end. After their shellacking of the Steelers last week, he said to the reporter, asked him how he felt, what his thoughts were on Roger Goodell not showing up to the game. He says, he's like Waldo right now. Where is he? He doesn't want to be here right now.
Locker room talk. He's in the locker room and he's talking.
You know it. So what do we think about Roger Goodell not coming to Foxborough? What do we think? I don't know. Do we think it's the fact that he's scared of Patriots fans, or do we think it's something else? It's that he just doesn't want to show his face. He doesn't want to give Patriots the opportunity to spit in his face or something.
Well, you all know Barstool Sports, and Dave Portnoy, the leader of Barstool Sports, has said he does not disavow spitting or taunting the commissioner. So I do not blame Roger Goodell for not coming, although I'm not a fan. I blame Dave Portnoy.
I don't think we want him to come.
No. It's a distraction.
Not only is it a distraction, it keeps this thing going.
Exactly.
Like, it keeps allowing us to talk about this, and it makes this a big deal. I like it.
Children have been in the streets. Women and children, men even, have been crying for Goodell to retire from commissioner of the NFL. I mean, we hate him. We got to fire Goodell. There's a reason why he didn't come, and that's why. We all hate him. He's right. A terrible person.
So my locker room talk is Travis Kelce. Now, also could be a hardo, but so Travis Kelce getting interviewed decides to go absolutely off on the refs. I cannot say everything he said. He said that he should not be even able to work at Foot Locker. Now,
That's a reference to their stripes.
Yes,
it is.
The
Foot Locker workers wear the referee stripes, so that's what he's referring to there.
And he went off and said, and basically that everyone who was wearing the stripes that day should not be allowed to have a job. So that's some locker room talk. Travis Kelce, ultimate hardo. Now we have another segment, mixed signals. So just like certain high school students, pro athletes often aren't always clear with what they're trying to say. In this, we will explore this week's mixed signals in pro sports. So Mitch?
Sure. So my mixed signals guy, I got Big Ben Roethlisberger. After the Steelers lost to the Patriots on Sunday night, Big Ben was not so sure what he was going to do with his future. He was kind of like, well, I don't know what I'm going to do next year. I'm leaving everything on the table. I'm leaving all my options open. So, Big Ben, he's sending us mixed signals. What's he going to do? Is he going to stay? Is he going to stay with the Steelers? Is he going to retire? Is he going to go to a different team? Is he perhaps going to go back to his clock in London?
Oh, good comparison. Wow.
Who knows?
See, that's the ultimate mixed signal right there. Acting like a teenage girl in high school.
Exactly. You never know what they're going to do.
All right, yeah. So my mixed signal, I've got the Boston Bruins organization, the leaders, Don Sweeney, Cam Neely, Jeremy Jacobs. Guys, don't fire Claude Julien. You've been sending some mixed signals lately, but Claude Julien's a legend. I mean, he won a Stanley Cup. He's been doing great things. And the Bruins, they're still just barely out of the wild card. They just need a couple wins to turn it around. They've lost a couple close games. I get that coaching is a part of this, but it just takes that final spark to bring the team together. Don't send the mixed signals. Keep Claude Julien. We want him. Keep him in Boston.
So oftentimes, I feel like GMs fire coaches way too early, like very prematurely.
Don Sweeney, hockey guy.
Like Claude Julien, sure, the Bruins have missed the playoffs recently a couple times, but overall, he's been doing a good job with the Boston Bruins. And I don't see why a few bad games here and there is the reason why they're considering
firing.
They've
been consistently good.
Right.
Since Claude Julien took
exactly.
over.
He's been dealing with the hand that he's been dealt from Don Sweeney. No, not being able, getting a bunch of older players like Dominic Moore. What's Dominic Moore going to do for the future of the Bruins? Okay.
Exactly.
Another thing, I forgot what I was going to say. So if Don Sweeney can think that this is such an easy job behind the bench, then why isn't he step behind the bench? He's a hockey guy. He's played hockey. He's a former Bruin. Why doesn't he get behind the bench and see how easy it is, or just how hard it is to play with the players that are currently on the Bruins? There's not much he can do with that team.
Right. Put your money where your mouth is, Don.
Exactly. Get behind the bench. I wouldn't mind seeing it. I'm sure Claude would love it. He'd say, wow, okay, you try my job for a day. Bruins would probably get blown out 7-0. David Ortiz, famed Red Sox designated hitter. Current designated hitter or former designated? We don't know.
Make signals. He's sending
signals. He really is sending them. Social media, you see it everywhere. Before on Twitter, his bio on Twitter, he took out Red Sox designated hitter. 2 weeks later, after he retires, he puts it back in his bio. For what purpose? I can imagine him typing that, thinking, Chris Sale on the Red Sox now? Finally have some really good pitching? Might be a time to get back, bring the Red Sox to World Series.
And didn't he just tweet at the Boston Globe, too?
Yeah.
What did he just tagged them in a tweet? Like, what's that supposed to mean?
Kind of makes you think a little bit.
Kind of makes you think.
Kind of makes you think. Honestly, this one hurts to the heart.
Yep.
Big Poppy's been my idol since day one, you know? He's a phenom. He's Boston's hero, and if he's going to send us these mixed signals,
I sent out a tweet after his last game, and I said, I can't remember watching a Boston Red Sox game that Big Poppy wasn't a part of the team.
No.
It's crazy.
And even if he's not playing, even if he's injured, you always see him on the top step of the dugout.
Exactly. Yeah, he's there. Yeah.
And you know that he is definitely, no matter what mixed signals he sends, he's definitely itching to get back.
And once the season kicks up and he sees his teammates are out there on the field, I find it hard to believe that he's going to be able to stay on the sidelines.
Quick question.
This is a hot take.
Hot take?
You heard it here first.
Hot take. Yep. Hot take.
Poppy is not going to come back as a player. He's going to come back as a coach because this Red Sox team is going to be nothing without Big Poppy.
Yep.
Definitely agree with that. The Red Sox, pretty sure Dealing Dave said he would give Big Poppy any job in the organization he wanted.
That's how much
they respect him.
Even a player, that's any job. Also, I say if I'm dealing Davey Dombrowski, I put a blank check. I go to Big Poppy's house and put a blank check.
How much do you want?
And I say, how much do you want? You can train. You don't even have to train. Okay, he's a gifted athlete. I say you go to his house maybe February and say you can come back from anywhere from April to August as long as you come back before then. And if you would like to help us win one more World Series, please fill out that check and write whatever number you want. Sabermetrics. The wildest, most true facts found on the internet, brought to the radio. So, Mitch, would you like to kick us off with a little sabermetric you found?
Sure. So, my sabermetric. So, we all know height is a very important part of basketball. And the Celtics star player, Isaiah Thomas, he's not a very tall guy. I'm actually taller than him. I'm 5'10". He's 5'9".
Big difference.
Big difference. So, statistically, inch for inch, get this, sabermetric, Isaiah Thomas is having a better season than Michael Jordan ever did.
Wow.
Inch for inch. So get this. Michael Jordan's best season, 32 points per game he put up. All right? Isaiah Thomas, this season so far, he's having the best season of his career, 29 points per game. Michael Jordan is 6'6", 78 inches. Isaiah Thomas, 5'9", 69 inches. MJ averages 0.411 points per inch, while Isaiah Thomas averages 0.420 points per inch, proving that Isaiah Thomas is the GOAT.
I completely agree. Like, I see all the coverage nowadays is about Isaiah Thomas. Why aren't they talking about Michael Jordan?
Kind of makes me think.
Jack?
I mean, he's not in the NBA anymore, but...
If he was really the greatest of all time, wouldn't they be talking about him?
I feel like people still talk about Michael Jordan.
Not as much as they're talking about IT, exactly. And what do we think about IT not being voted in by the fans for the All-Star game?
Zaza Pachulia was voted in for the fans. So that's why they should take away the fan vote from every single sport. Because I remember 2 years ago, the Kansas City Royals fans, after they went to the World Series 1 year, 2015, that's the year they won it, every single one of their fans sent, like the starting nine, 1 through 9, was Kansas City Royals. Omar Infante was batting .220 and got in over Dustin Pedroia and Jose Altuve. That makes zero sense. That's why fan voting shouldn't be allowed. Even the players there's three factors that go into the voting. It's the fans, the players, and the coaches. And even the players had some crazy votes. They voted in, like, I think it was Mo Williams. He hasn't even played a game this year. The voting needs to be changed, not just solely given to the writers who think they know everything. it needs to be a balance and not just, you know, there shouldn't be any tiebreakers. It just be who are the best players.
All right, so I've got a hot sabermetric here.
Let's hear it.
It's the Bedford hockey team. We've got a couple goalies on this team, and there's kind of a little highlight in stats that some people might be interested in. Ryan Lee and Eric Voloshin. Eric Voloshin is the starting goalie known as Natty Camp by many for his appearance in the Nationals camp. Ryan Lee is his backup along with David Guillemot. But Ryan Lee...
Patrick Gately too.
Patrick Gately is a practice player.
He's the manager.
But we love him. We love him.
Oh, yeah. No.
We
no,
love Gator.
No hate to Gator. No hate to Gator.
Amen
great
to that.
Guy.
He's the American Pharaoh.
American Pharaoh.
We love him.
All right, continue.
But yeah, so Ryan Lee just got an assist as a goalie.
No way.
Yeah, it's true against Memorial. So he is probably the first goalie in Bedford High School hockey history to get an assist.
Wow.
Ryan Lee also has zero goals against this season.
So Ryan Lee is obviously the better goaltender.
Well, yeah. Eric Voloshin has, what, 10 goals against? And he's got no assists. I mean,
why isn't Ryan Lee at Natty Camp? That's my question.
Yeah, great point.
And I mean, Ryan Lee's got the flow, too.
Oh,
you look
my God,
at that.
That flow is majestic.
It's like a horse's mane, my friend.
Whether it's coming out of the bucket or coming out of the baseball hat, you know Ryan Lee's always got it.
That's true.
So thank you for listening to the Weekend Windup on Bedford 105.1. I'm your host, Matt Provo, this week. Thanks again.
And remember, Bedford, stay classy.